Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey, that was for New Orleans because I just came back.
Nolens, how's Essence Fest?
Oh my gosh, it was awesome and brutally hot. And I did not stick to my WW. I don't know why Weight Watchers doesn't want to be called Weight Watchers. Whatever. I will respect their new name, WW. I didn't stick to my WW because it's Nolens, baby. So you know you have to eat fried catfish and shrimp and gumbo. I had it all and I still lost 2 pounds because that's how hot it was and how much walking we had to do.
Why do they do it in July in New Orleans?
I don't know, but when I tell you sweltering,
wow,
doesn't even begin to, I mean, I was like, so I think I'm going to evaporate. But, and then you have to walk because there are literally 500,000 women in the city. And so Uber is a joke. Like it'll be an hour for one block. Like even though you're like, there's no way I can walk. It's impossible to walk in this heat. There's literally no way not to walk. So there's that. But other than that, honestly, it's always a good time. It was my first time going where I wasn't heavily, like, usually I've got like 2 or 3 things a day, and this time I had not planned on going, but then they had their first Black Global Financial Forum, and so like 2 weeks before they were like, we really would like for you to come, and so I said yes, kind of like last minute. And so because of that, it was nice to like experience Essence Fest as like, you know, someone just going versus like working.
Yeah. So did you see any, what was like your favorite event beyond the one that you were on?
Well, hands down, Michelle Obama. I missed her Becoming tour. And so she basically had like a tour stop at Essence Fest. It was in the stadium, their Mercedes-Benz stadium. And for the first time, like I'd been, this is my 4th year, and I've never seen the stadium filled to capacity. And it was, I mean, people were out for Lady O. She was amazing. I didn't realize how homegirl she was. I mean, I knew she was south side of Chicago, but I was like, oh, Michelle. Oh, this is Mishu. Okay. Like she was so awesome. Like she just was so chill and relaxed. She just seemed like your cool auntie that was just like spitting the real. Like, yeah. So I'm like, yes, Michelle.
I just love like, that yeah. She is like, she's selling out stadiums on her tour. And I wanted to go see her, but it was just so much money. I'm like, she's charging Beyonce prices at these tours, and Beyonce must be so mad because she's just sitting there talking like all the work Beyonce has to do. Michelle's like, I'm just here in this fabulous outfit, and I'm gonna, you know,
looking fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Share about my life.
It was definitely hands down my favorite. Well, my favorite event, but my favorite thing about Essence Fest, honestly, Mandra, I met so many dope folks who were like, oh my God, I listened to the podcast. One woman in particular, she like rushed with her arms open, then she stopped. She's like, I want to respect your personal space. I know you don't like hugs, but can I hug you? And I let her. And it was so cute. She's like, and this is for Mandy. So she gave me an extra one for you. So
always give her 2 hugs.
But with so many BA listeners, they were like, oh my God, I love the podcast. Or just like, you know, asking questions from the podcast. It was just, that part was definitely my favorite. Seeing people who were like, oh my gosh, I took your challenge. Or oh my gosh, your credit advice. Or oh my gosh, I listened to the podcast. So it was just awesome. Because what I loved is that there were like women in their 20s and their 30s and their 50s and their 60s. And like all of those women participated in what we do. And so I just thought that was awesome. So it was so nice meeting y'all in person.
Oh, lovely. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
Actually, I need some Brown Ambition Nation help right now because I am being tried to death by the manufacturers called LG. Is that a manufacturer? Whatever. The dishwasher people. We bought this dishwasher for over $900 last, and we agonized over it. I mean, okay, I'm not going to lie. He agonized over it and researched everything, picked the best top of the line, blah, 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 and got this dishwasher. It was installed in December or January, and has been working perfectly fine. And then all of a sudden, 2 months ago, started giving us an error code, started to leak, stopped washing properly. And then we became, you know, you just think we bought it from, you know, a company like Best Buy, from a big brand like LG. They must have people out here who can repair these things or figure out what's going on. We've gone through 4 different visits, 3 from the Best Buy people who somehow sent us a Sears repair guy. Like, I don't understand how that works. I saw that Sears truck and I'm like, is it 1999? Like, what are they doing here? But apparently Sears, they contract them to do their like repair visits. Anyway, there's nothing more frustrating than like taking time out of your day for work. I have to work from home when this happens because I, you know, I have the remote job, so I'm stuck working from home. Sitting there with like these smelly guys in my house, like just staring at my dishwasher like dopes and just telling me, I don't know what it is. You just, you know, keep complaining and maybe they'll replace it for you. And finally, we complained enough after like the third visit from Best Buy's Sears people that they sent us like someone from actual LG. This guy showed up yesterday and immediately it was clear he was on LG's side, even though we've had this dishwasher less than what, 8 months now. It was clear to him that it was our fault and that something was, some piece of the dishwasher was bent. I don't understand. He just looked at it and was like, oh yeah, look, this is bent. Oh yeah, we can't replace that. LG will never replace it. And it's not covered under your warranty. And I'm going to put it in my notes that this was not, you know, not LG's fault. It probably happened, he said, during delivery or during installation. And I'm asking all these questions like, so why did it not manifest this issue until May when we've been living here since December? And he had no answers for me, took out all my stuff from under my sink and just left it on the counter and made his, you know, little notes on his notepad. And I was so annoyed. I was just like, fine, you can go. And they really did deny the claim. Like, they will not replace it. They won't. They say they can't repair it. And I don't know. Like, I just can't fathom how a major appliance like this to me seems like what a warranty is all about.
Yes.
And I'm like, what the hell are we, like, I don't want to spend another $1,000 on, and this dishwasher is like it still smells new, you know, it's a beautiful glistening, you know, and I'm thinking back to like the dinky dishwasher, like the Maytag dishwasher that was in the house when we first moved in, that thing was still cranking after 30 years.
Can you imagine? That's how that goes.
30
so
years.
What do you need? I told Mandra that she needs to take it to the Twitter streets. That's what I do. And I suggest this for everyone because nobody wants bad publicity. So when a company does me wrong, I will do a series of tweets expressing my displeasure, explaining like tweet one, I bought a dishwasher, tweet two, like, you know, and tagging them the whole way. And without fail, they will tweet you back. Usually they'll say, please DM me. We don't want you to be unhappy. What they're really saying is, please stop the negative press. But what makes it even better is that as I tweet, people usually reply to me and I make sure to reply back to everyone and retweet like, what? I had problems with LG too. No, you don't say, girl. So what we'd like for you to do. So Mandy, what's your Twitter name?
So my Twitter name is at Mandy Woodruff. Mandy with an I.
Yes. And so Mandy's going to tweet LG and we would love for you to go head on in and retweet and reply back. And that way she can show like, you might not want to mess with this one because people are listening.
I haven't hate tweeted a brand since maybe, it's been years since like an airline. Spirit Airlines might have been the last brand that I hate tweeted. What's the most you've gotten back from? Like, what's the biggest thing you've gotten back from a company by tweeting at them?
Let's see. Oh, so many things. I'm not going to lie. I wouldn't call it hate tweeting. Just a little a pressure applied.
Truth telling. Truth tweeting.
I'm trying to think. Oh, it was an airline. So I got my ticket refunded. I think it was maybe like $800 or something crazy. Because what happened was, I think it was like, it was really their fault. And then I missed like a connecting flight. It was just like a tumble of effects. And a friend of mine works for the airline and he was like, no, if if they said that the flight was delayed because of mechanical error, that's our error. And so, you know, so he was like, so don't, you know, stay on them. And so I had been emailing them and they were like, basically like, no, it's not our fault. And I was like, you know what, let me take it to the Twitter streets. And I did. And within like, you know, 10, 15 minutes, they hit me back and then it escalated up to whomever and I got my money back. So I was like, thank you very much. But honestly, I don't even hesitate. Like you should see now, my father will call me and be like, can you hit up Twitter? I'm like, daddy. No, but honestly, it really works. And so it's best not to be nasty. You just want to be truthful and express your frustration. And it should be more than one tweet. I would say it's good between like 5 to 10, depending on how detailed you need to get. And if I know I'm getting detail, I will actually even label them like one. So that way it's clear.
Like one of five. Yeah. I have started a Twitter thread. I'm just going to tell the truth. And it's just ridiculous. It's less than a year old. And the fact that they're trying to make it seem like it was something that happened 5 months ago and, oh, just happened to take 4 months for the issue to manifest. It just strikes me as insane. But my other plan B, so I'll try Twitter. So you guys check Twitter. I'm going to wait till Wednesday evening when you've listened to the podcast and you've heard this plea from me. But also we purchased the dishwasher on our credit card, on our Citi card, our Citi double cash card. And one of the perks of Citi, this is kind of sad because Citi actually just announced that they are removing some of the best perks that make it amazing. Some of them that I've talked about on the show, I talked about Citi Price Rewind, where if you make a purchase, we made purchases for all these appliances. And then if you register them with Price Rewind, if the price drops, they will actually go and refund you. Like the amount that it dropped. And we probably saved got hundreds of dollars back on our appliances by using Price Rewind. But they're sunsetting that benefit for some cards starting September 23rd, I believe. And also purchase protection is going to go away for some cards. And that's what we're using right now while we still can, which is we've complained to Citi about this whole dishwasher thing with Best Buy. And we're going to see if they will give us back the money because of the situation. So we have a claim out to them. We'll see. But what I'm not going to do is spend another $1,000 on a damn dishwasher.
That's like, crazy.
I just can't do it. It's just not in my
And you shouldn't. Blood. And that's not, you know, it's not $50, $10, $1,000. Even if it was $50 or $10, that's still your money. And your dishwasher is not old. And like, and, you know, it's so crazy. Isn't it so frustrating how like the old simple appliances last way longer than these newfangled things that we have out now?
I just hear Ed and Rosemary, my former homeowners, just being like, yeah, we had that thing since 1979, never failed us once. And I'm like, I know, but it was ugly. I just wanted stainless steel. Anyway, so thanks, guys, in advance for your, you know, we'll see. Let's get the man. Stick it to the man.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget, Mandy with an I, Woodruff, and you're going to retweet and just reply. If you've had any trouble with LG dishwashers, you are certainly ready, like, welcome to join in. And yeah, let's get this party started. That's how you get brands to really take notice, because ultimately, sometimes they need a little bad press to get it together.
Yes, ma'am. And so while I'm ranting about my dishwasher experience, I want to go to the reader mailbag early on the show today, because last week we talked all about childcare and how expensive it is, and how especially for even like families earning six figures, like we found in our Magnify Money study last month, you can still feel broke because of the cost of childcare. So we asked you guys to send us your stories of what it was like to pay for childcare where you live. And we got a ton of responses. Okay. I really felt the pain of this one listener. What's her name? Natasha. So I'm going to read her email first and then I'll share some of the others. So okay. Natasha lives in Akron, Ohio. And she says,
isn't that where LeBron James is from, right?
Is he?
I think so.
Cleveland?
No, I think he's from Akron, but he plays for Cleveland.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. Sports are hard. Okay. Oh, by the way, go Women's World Soccer. Hey, yes. World Cup winners. Okay, anyway, so Natasha says, my kids are now 5 and 7, going to the first and second grade. However, when I had my second child, my husband decided to become a stay-at-home dad because we were looking at paying $360 a week per kid to send the kids to daycare. He was only making $12 at the time, so it didn't make sense for him to work all those hours to pay strangers damn near his entire check to take care of our kids. Fast forward to now that the kids are grown and they're in public school, she still pays $160 per week per kid for them to attend aftercare program at their school. This is what, and this is Mandy talking, like, this is what drives me nuts. Like, when I was in public school, we had after school care. We didn't pay for that.
Yeah. They pay for that now?
Yes, they pay for that now. They're not the only ones. I've heard this from parents. Like hundreds of dollars just because, you know, school ends at like 2:15. You know, parents still work till 6, so they need to put their kid in after school care. So, yeah, schools charge for that. All right. Anyway, so then she goes on to say after, you know, on days where they don't have school, it's another $80 a day on top of the weekly cost for after school care. And then in the summertime, she's back to that 360 a rate, 360 a week rate, which is like so much. But then she, this is the part where I think it'll hit home for some people. She says, I'm in a position, I'm grateful that I'm in a position where I can afford childcare, but it's frustrating knowing that most of the parents that attend the daycare center my kids go to are getting the same service for free. I understand people have tougher situations, but there never seems to be relief for the middle class. A lot of us don't end up with much disposable income when we are done handling our business and paying for things that people with less income receive benefits for. Some people get food stamps, utility assistance, cheap housing, healthcare, childcare, et cetera, but we get zero assistance because we happen to play our cards well. I know this sounds bitter, but it does have me in my feelings when I know I busted my ass to get here, but I would have been all right if I made different choices that led to more government-assisted living. I really think the childcare system in this country is broken. I don't know if it's cold in here, but I got a little bit of a chill reading that. It's so honest and raw.
It is. And I'll say this, that to be fair, I see both sides for sure, because it was like when I was going to college, my parents, I guess, were considered middle class. And it was like I couldn't get any real assistance. It was just loans. Whereas, you know, folks who didn't make as much, you know, could get assistance. So it's definitely frustrating. But I will say, as being a preschool teacher for 10 years and seeing parents seeing parents on the other side, it's not. Every parent is not like they didn't play their cards right. There are literally, I mean, I've known women who were in domestic violence situations that, you know, as a result, you know, now they're single mothers. And so even though they're educated themselves, you know, one income is not enough necessarily to take care of two children. And you did play your cards right. But, you know, unfortunately, the person you're with is not a good person. You know, I've known people who have, you know, experienced maybe whoever else was kind of helping with childcare. Pass away. So there are other, I understand the frustration, because here's the thing, I think in general, that there should be assistance for childcare across the board. But what I will say is I've just seen too many parents, the ones that do get like subsidized help, that it's rarely like, you know, just because they're chilling. You know, these parents, you know what I mean? Like, but I do agree that like, because here's the thing, $2,500 is $2,500 a month. Like that's just a crazy amount of money, two kids. That's what one of my friends pays. So, you know, that's why honestly, like many of the cities, they don't do this. I don't think like in a lot of like maybe the affluent suburbs, but like in Newark, East Orange, I know this to be true. There, I don't know if it's called the Abbott Law, but there was a law passed that made preschool public school. So what that means is that, and this is not, like I said, in a lot of the affluent areas, but some of these cities are not, you know, terrible. But what that means is that once the child turns 3, they can go to preschool for free, which used to basically be called daycare. But now it's preschool and it's part of the public school system. But then there's still aftercare, because this is my nephew's is 3. And so he goes to preschool. His mom was like, my sister was like, whew, I'm so glad that he's old enough to go to preschool, so that's one less payment I have to pay, but she still has to pay for aftercare. So, you know, there's that. But yeah, it's just frustrating, and I agree. And truthfully, I think that childcare should be reasonable for everyone, or that everyone should have the opportunity to have free preschool. So at least to alleviate some of that burden, and regardless of what your income is, because it's still a tremendous amount of money.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, that sense of bitterness, I think, just comes from a frustration of feeling like, and she's also kind of, when you're in that situation, it's easy to look at people who and create your own narrative for them. Like, oh, they didn't make the right choices and now they're getting rewarded for it. And I think that's like part of the toxic. It can be toxic, and it can also distract from what the real issue is. Like Tiff saying, like, it's not so much thinking about, people don't need to get less so that you can have more all the time.
Yes.
And I think that mentality, I hear it a lot in like conservative circles when they talk this way about about social, what are they called? Now I can't think of the right word. Oh my God. These, you know, programs
they call them entitlement programs.
Entitlement. Thank you. Entitlement programs like SNAP, like food stamps, like other assistance programs, is that it's very much like, oh, if they have, then I can't have. And in order for me to have, we have to take it away from them. I would prefer if we created a system where we continue to support those families who do need this and not project stories onto them that we don't even know their lives. Like you don't know what they're going through. They may have really great, you know, it may be that they did make the right choices and they still ended up in this situation or a spouse died and they ended up with a single income or
I'm not going to lie. Cause I grew up in like super suburbs, right? Westfield, New Jersey, super suburbs, affluent. My dad really worked really hard. My mom really worked really hard to make sure he was like, it's either private school or pay taxes in a town with a great public school. So I was fortunate. So I'm not going to lie. Before I came to work in Newark, I was very much of the mindset of like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, work hard and you can make it. That's what I thought. Easy for me to say with two parents with both master's degrees and growing up in Westfield with an excellent education. The truth is, it wasn't until I started teaching in Newark that I was like, whoa, like, I mean, I knew that people kind of like didn't start off on even playing fields, but I just assumed if you work hard, you could overcome that. I had 3-year-olds who used to come and be like, I saw a dead body today. You know, you have 4-year-olds who are like, you know, like they're seeing drunkenness, drugs, death, destruction at 4, who have seen more at 4 than I used to when I was 22 when I first started teaching. And I remember I used to go home almost every day for my first year of teaching and cry almost every single day because I thought to myself, this 3-year-old has experienced more life than I have. How can I say if you just work hard? Because it's their they did not choose the situation or circumstance, and it helps to flavor the rest of your life. I actually had to stop teaching. Like I knew that even though the year that my school closed down, I was ready to leave. It had brought me to like a place I wasn't happy. Like I loved the kids, but it was so dark, like working in an environment, like I said, not the kids, not even the parents, but just like the overall environment where we were. It was so disparaging. Like I wasn't the same. I remember my boyfriend at the time was like, you don't even laugh as much, Tiffany. You don't smile as much. And it was changing me. And so I say all that to say that, like, so I'm not, you know, definitely not knocking our what was her name? Marie?
Natasha.
Because I was under that impression too, until for 10 years, I was in an environment where I was like, wow, how do you ascend from an environment such as this? It is very difficult. It was hard for me as an adult. I had to leave it. I can't imagine a child that doesn't have a choice. And then you grow up into an adult who that's all you've seen and known. And it's just very difficult to do better when you're not around better.
The parents who are trying to do better by trying to get access to the nice daycare that maybe her kids are going to, they need the assistance in order to get that leg up, right? So it's like I would just say like to get out of your own negative like mindset. And the reason I got chills is because I feel like it just really, this frustration I know is very common. And I would like to challenge it just by saying that forget about them in the equation. And like, you know, it's not about their benefits taking away from what you could be getting. It's like challenge our elected officials to create policies to, and their system is broken. I 100% agree.
Yep.
Vote for people who agree with you and have plans to expand childcare resources and benefits to the middle class, to people who are working hard. And if you listen to that, you know, most recent debate, Democratic debate, I can think of Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren, Kristen Gillibrand. They made a point to talk about those programs in that debate. And so pay attention and we just gotta, it's not going to be fixed tomorrow. We have to vote. And I would say it's a misplaced frustration to blame the people who are struggling and trying to get a leg up however they can. I would focus more on what we can do. And that's really voting. But thank you, Natasha. I'm going to read a couple, not as heavy as that one, but that was a good one to start with.
It was.
But Bridget in Knoxville, Tennessee. So I thought Knoxville, Tennessee, they must be super affordable. No, she spends $22,000 a year to put her two kids through childcare. It's about $400-something per week. She says, I cry internally every week that check clears. We are not a six-figure household, and we are sinking due to the amount that we pay for daycare.
Goodness.
Over $22K a year. Rachel, who has friends who live in Virginia, says that the cost of their rental apartment was $2,200 a month. Child care for two children was $4,200.
Oh, my gosh.
$4,200 a month.
I don't even honestly. And where was it, in Virginia?
Virginia, the suburbs of Virginia.
And how many kids?
Two. Oh
my gosh, $4,200 a month times 12, $50,400 a year. That's insane.
God damn.
Honestly, that's like college.
That's college. Yeah, you could pay for several years of college. That's insane.
Oh my gosh.
And then everyone's like, and open a 529 for your child and all. And I'm like, yeah, but how? With what money after daycare?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Another listener, Amber, lives in the suburbs of Maryland between D.C. and Baltimore. They pay $1,720 per month, again, for two kids. And then when their five-year-old starts public school, the two and a four-year-old, and they're looking forward to their four-year-old turning five because that means they can save $800 a month when their kids are going to school. Amber says, we've redone our budget and decided to surrender both of our newish cars and purchase paid-off older cars, slashing our budget by $1,400 a month to make room. We've also decided to cut off our cable and get internet only with Netflix and Hulu. This will hopefully allow us more breathing room so we're not living paycheck to paycheck anymore.
Wow.
That's great, but...
I know.
Thank you guys for sharing. You know, if I feel like this was cathartic. If you want to continue sending your emails and messages about the cost of childcare or whatever you think is like the biggest part of your budget that you just want to, you know, share with us, hit us up at Brown Ambition Podcast on Instagram or email us at the Brown Ambition. Wait, email us where? At Brown Ambition Podcast at gmail.com. And we'd love to, maybe we'll read some more of these on the show.
Yeah, no, these are great. But it is, yeah. I wonder who has the most expensive childcare. I'd be curious to, like, what state.
$200 a month. You know, that's why they say kids are the new, like, kids are the new status symbol. You know, the more kids you can afford to have to pay for childcare. I mean, not just, like, unless you've got live-in relatives or whatnot. But, I mean, I read an article, it wasn't this year, maybe last year, about in New York City how the third kid is now the new status symbol.
I did read that. I think I was watching not a documentary, but like a, I don't know, like a news segment. And I'm like, wow, that like the New York elite trying to have a gang of kids to be like, look, we can afford them.
Oh my
God. Like, okay, girl, I know, right? I guess.
My friends who are having kids, they want to have two because you want like a friend for the first kid, you know, to help them or like be there for them later in life or whatever. But just to have that second kid, it just doubles that expense. And you don't want them to be too far apart in age. So you do have like a lot of our listeners have said you end up with kids who are a couple years apart in age and daycare at the same time. And that's when it becomes excruciatingly difficult financially. So it's, you know, it sucks to think about money stopping someone from fulfilling their dreams of being a parent. But when you hear numbers like this, you know, it just drives home. It just makes the reality so much more clear. Like I can't blame people for waiting.
I'm like five kids, mommy and daddy. How, sis? Even back then, that's crazy. So that feedback was amazing. Let's dig back in the email bag and do some questions, shall we?
Okay. All right. I'm really excited about today's questions because, one, I love when we get a guy asking us a question. Two, I love it even more when he refers to us as his queens. So first question comes from listener Scott, who says, hello, my queens. My wife and I are in a four-year window of buying a house. Both our credit scores are in the 600s, and I was wondering, because we want to raise our score, is it worth it to do boostmyscore.com? It's a credit piggybacking website that can help us raise our scores. I'm already using SelfLender. In a few months, I'll have my credit cards jump like Jordan. I have nobody to use.
That's my thing.
Jumping. I know. Hey, he listens. He says, I'm already using SelfLender, and in a few months, I should have my credit score jump like Jordan. I have nobody to piggyback off of, and I'm going to explain what this whole thing means after I finish reading his question. I have nobody to piggyback off of, so should I pay for this service? If so, how about how far from applying for a mortgage should I sign up? Thanks for your help and all you do. I'm a truck driver and listen to you guys when I'm driving. Love the podcast. Thank you, Scott. Scott, the truck driver. I love that.
Yes, I love that you listen. I love when they use vernacular back, jump like Jordan. Yes, piggybacking. You guys are really learning.
So I looked into this. Had you heard of boostmyscore.com before?
I've heard of it. Well, first, you said you were going to talk about what piggybacking was.
So that's the strategy that Boost My Score uses. So Boost My Score is just another credit repair firm. And I went to their website and it is all flashy and, you know, has all these, you know, promises of improving your credit. So anyway, the credit repair services sometimes use this tactic called piggybacking, which is where they actually pay people who do have good credit to add their clients as a authorized user on their credit accounts so that client of theirs can then get the benefit of that user's positive credit. It's like, imagine if you don't have a relative or a mom or a dad or a spouse to become an authorized user on their account to help boost your credit. So you go to a site like boostmyscore.com and they'll help match you with a random stranger who has agreed, because they're getting paid by boostmyscore.com, to let you attach yourself to their, become an authorized user on their account. And I did some digging. There's not a ton of articles written on this practice. There's some question of how legitimate it is and how even effective it is. It definitely has been used. It can be legitimate. It can legitimately help. The issue is that you never know if the lender who you're applying with is going to factor in that authorized is going to give you credit for that authorized user behavior. Not all credit cards even report authorized user behavior to the credit bureaus. So you'd have to really make sure that you'd have to know what lender you're going to be applying with to see what credit score model they use, and does that credit score model, because there's a million different credit score models, a million different versions of the FICO score they could be using. And I can tell you with mortgages, they're all using, I think it is like FICO 2. It's one of the older FICO models. Now we're up to like FICO 9 or something. Mm-hmm. And if they are, it may not be giving you the benefit that you think. I would be weary of any credit repair service that you see or that sort of like presents itself as a quick and easy fix. You guys say you have a 4-year window to buy a house. That to me sounds like plenty of time to get your credit score up.
Plenty.
Plenty. Mm-hmm. You're already doing some really smart stuff. So SelfLender, we talked about them before, right, Tiff?
Yeah, no, I love SelfLender, honestly. To me, it's like one of those win-wins. So they sound like they're on the right track. And credit is one of those things that I think people forget that credit is, because people, I'm sure you get this question, Mandy, if I do this one thing, what will my score be? It's like, sis, that's not how credit works. It's an average of your good choices or bad choices. And so it's, you have to think about it like your GPA, like when you were in college or high school, right? So if you're like, oh, if I get an A in math, what's my GPA going to be? I don't know. I would have to know like what other grades did you get? What'd you do junior year? What'd you do sophomore year? Because the grades that matter most are the ones you got within the last 2 years, but the other grades still play somewhat of a role. So it's just about, so the key is, with credit, I feel like it's not about looking back, it's about looking forward, because the last 2 years mean the most. So that means if you can get as many A's as possible moving forward, you could offset any D's, F's, or C's that you got in the past. And then you can kind of like, think about like if you have one F and one A+, so your average is likely a C, but then you get another A+, and another A+, another A+, and all of a sudden that F is not having as big of a drag down as it did when you only had a couple of grades. So yeah, 4 years is plenty of time. Believe me, I had a foreclosure. I had late bills. I had all this stuff. I had at one point I had an 802 right before the recession hit and I lost everything. And then I dropped down to a 547. That's with the foreclosure and everything, like late bills. And so it took me about, because foreclosure is such a big black mark on your credit score. It took me about 2 years of like paying things on time, paying off a credit card in full every month. And then I got in 2 years, I got up to maybe like a year and a half or year some change. I got up to like a 750, and then two and a half years in, I'm back in the 800s with, despite the fact of having a foreclosure still active on my, it hasn't fallen off yet on my credit report. So I say all that to say, you've got time, you're doing the right thing. Just keep getting those A's. It will offset any negative things that you had previously. My only concern too about piggybacking with someone, and I'm sorry, Lisa. So for example, I let my baby sister, Lisa, piggyback on one of my cards. Cause I'm like, I never use it. Of course, randomly, I forgot that something like charged, and I didn't know cause I never used the card. So I didn't pay. It was like a $10 charge. I didn't see the email that they said, like, you know, something is due. It wasn't until she called me and she's like, you have a late payment? I was like, I do. It was of course on the one card.
She was counting on you.
I know. So I felt bad. So there's always that, you know, that you have the, unfortunately there's the potential that, you know, you add someone to your card and you know that, or that person adds you to their card and they, you know, they make a mistake and now it looks like you made a mistake too. So I just say, continue the good work, what you're doing now. It will offset each other. You're going to raise your average.
You've got plenty of time. You don't need to piggyback off a stranger, let alone pay for it. Like, you don't have to pay to improve your credit. You just got to have really good habits. So self-lender is a good starting point. If you guys maybe boost your credit score a little bit, you can work with even like a credit union and get a small credit builder loan or just a small personal loan. And then you just pay that back and that can help you boost your score at all. We have a lot of tips. I can share a couple of articles with some credit building strategies. It will take time, but like, I mean, a year or two and you've got four, you can definitely get those scores way, way, way up. Just do it. It's like dieting. Like, don't go for the quick fix. Just exercise, eat less. It works, you know, for a reason. So, but thank you so much for listening, Scott. Hope you're on the road somewhere cool right now. Okay, let's go to the gram. So this comes from listener Ashley. She says, I'd love to hear your take on my question on a future podcast. I'm fairly new to investing, and at the end of 2018, I set up a Roth IRA through Fidelity and chose my own investments based on the model portfolio recommendation from their retirement calculator. I currently have all my money invested in one mutual fund. Should I be investing in multiple mutual funds to diversify, or is having all my money in one mutual fund enough to have a balanced portfolio? Thank you. First and foremost, you should definitely go back and listen to our episode. I think I reran it a few weeks ago, How to Invest Beyond Your 401k, where we interview Helen Noe, who is my financial advisor. We talk all about diversification and investing. And of course, Helen's an expert. So, you know, she'll give you some, she gives good, really good tips for beginners on that podcast, on that episode.
Yes, she did.
Yeah. What I can say though is, so a mutual fund, it generally is a good idea. So a mutual fund basically lets you, let's say you're interested in not just buying one stock. You want to buy a bunch of different stocks all in one go. So a mutual fund allows you to do that, gives you a tiny piece of a bunch of different stocks all in one place. There's different types of mutual funds though, and you might want to diversify. Because mm-hmm. for example, if you have a mutual fund that's all in the S&P 500, it's like all, just all stocks in companies on the S&P, you just might be overdoing it with stocks and you don't have anything to balance it out like bonds. So there's mm-hmm. mutual funds and ETFs that trade in the bond market. And then there's some that cover international.
I was going to say that, yep.
Yeah, international. And there's small cap and large cap. And I'm surprised that if you use the retirement calculator that they offered you, that they wouldn't have recommended a more diversified portfolio. So you might want to maybe see if you can call Fidelity and get them to walk you through it. They may offer like a free service like that just to get you started, or rerun the numbers in another sort of portfolio diversification tool, because that might help you.
Yeah. I mean, there's a great book called, don't get me to lying. It's like, it's by the founder of Vanguard. It's, let me see, Jack Bogle. Yes. Jack Bogle. It's like Boglehead's Guide to Investing. It's literally like a 30 minute read or something like that. And so what I like about it is that he talks about that, the three funds they suggest are total market, total stock market fund. So that's like the S&P 500, total bond market fund, and then some money in an international fund. So those are the three, that's the mix of the three that they suggest. And then the way you choose bonds versus stocks, like how much should you be in bonds? How much should you be in stocks? I guess the rule of thumb for bonds is your age, because bonds are quote unquote safer than stocks. So they don't yield as much return, but they also they're not as volatile as stocks are. So if I'm 39, that means I should be like rule of thumb would be I'm 39% in bonds. And what is that? Is that 59? No, 61% in stocks. And I can shave a little off from either one of them to put some in the international market. And like my dad is 75. So ideally he should be 75% in bonds and 25% in stock. Cause the older you get, you know, the less risky you want your investments to be, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a great book to just kind of get an understanding of like what diversification kind of looks like. And like I said, the book is super skinny. It's super quick read. Quite honestly, you could probably just Google and get like the gist of it. If you don't want to pay for the book. First of all, kudos to you for investing. It's a good start that where you started. And the fact that you're asking a question shows that you're like, there must be more. And there is. Investing doesn't have to be overly complicated. I just think, and diversifying doesn't mean you have to buy individual stocks. So I'm glad that you're not. I know some people do, but for the average person, I just don't think that's a good investment strategy if you're not going to be able to keep up with it. So you're on the right road. You just got to add a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing I'll say is like a target date fund. We talked about that on the investing episode. They're a little bit different. So a target date fund is like all in one, a well-balanced meal, essentially. A target date fund is it's when you pick a fund based on your retirement age. So you say, I'm going to retire about the year 2055. So I'm going to pick the, target date fund 2055 that's offered by Fidelity. All the big brokerage firms have their own version of target date funds. And then a target date fund actually is already balanced for you. You don't need to have multiple target date funds to have a balanced portfolio. It consists of a bunch of different mutual funds that are diversified according to your age. So the same math that Tiffany did just now is kind of done for you. And then mm-hmm. over time, the target date fund will automatically reallocate stocks and bonds as you get older. And I'm telling you, if little know-nothing 23-year-old Mandy Woodruff, I just checked the same Vanguard 401k that I opened when I was 22. I hadn't contributed anything to it since 2016. In the last 3 years alone, I've gained $15,000-$16,000. Just nothing. Doing nothing. Just enjoying my life with a target date fund that I opened when I was 23. And I'm just like, God bless that little dummy who just opened a random account, at her first job. And I'm like, thank God, because I had no idea what I was doing. And you don't need to necessarily. It's just a matter of, like Tiffany said, just getting started at all.
Exactly, getting in the game, yeah.
And then you fine-tune your knowledge over time, It's just like you're doing right now. So thank you for your question, Ashley, on Instagram. Let's see, do we have time for one more?
Yeah, I think so.
Let's see. Oh, someone actually wanted to say thank you, Tiffany. Crystal on Instagram says thank you for sharing or recommending the 4-Hour Work Week.
Oh, yes. It's a great book, honestly. If you're not reading it, you should. It's just a great book for even if you're happy with your job and you're not looking to start not looking to start a business. It's just really, to me, it's a great book for productivity, whether you're an entrepreneur or you have a regular 9-to-5 job or whatever. So it's just a great book.
That's one of the books I've never read, and I'm just like, I need to read it. I'm not living my best life. Okay. Last question. Another investing question. I know you've heard of this company, Tiff. Very simple. @Monet on Instagram wants to know, have you guys heard of Elevest and what do you think about it?
Yes, I have heard of Elevest. I like Elevest. Here's why. So Elevest is, don't get me to lie. I guess, would it be called a brokerage firm? Is that what they call it? Let me see. Like what the technical term.
Robo advisory.
Yeah. So there's a bunch. So there's like, for example, there's like Betterment. You guys have probably heard of Wealthfront. Those are some of the like most popular ones. But the reason why I like Elvest is they're similar to the rest of those kind of funds as far as fees are concerned. But what I do like about it is that one, that they have funds that you can invest in that are tied to your social mission. So like you can be like, I want to invest my money, but I really want to be like socially conscious about it. So you could choose funds based upon helping women, helping kids, helping babies, helping dogs, whatever. So that's one. But two, probably my favorite part about Elvest is that most of these robo investing kind of companies, their template is a man. So I'll give you an example. So I am brown and my skin is like super chocolate. So when I buy pantyhose and it says nude, the template is not my skin color. So it's like, okay, girl, I guess, you know, so when I'm looking for nude, like I'm probably not going to find my skin color. But so it's like similar in investing in that, like the template that they're using is not really for women. And why does that matter? Because one, women tend to live longer. Two, women make less than men. We all know about the pay gap. Three, women sometimes will work less than men over their lifetimes because if you stop to have children, you know, let's just say you have two kids and that puts you out at least 2 years, maybe up to 5-10 years out of your life, out of the workforce. So LFS takes all that into consideration because the current kind of template to say, hey, if you put aside this amount of money, by the time you're ready to retire, this should be enough to keep your lifestyle going. That template doesn't work for women because our situation and circumstance are different than men. So LFS has created their own template to fit the way a woman's life plays out. And so that's probably the biggest part that I really like about them. Yeah, I work with them a lot. They're not the only kind of like robo advisor company I've suggested, but I've worked with them a lot and I've got really like, you know, they really try to figure out what life you want to live and lead. They have a really great survey when you first kind of like enter and really aligning your finances with that life goal. So yeah, I mean, there's a ton of great robo advisors. They're just one of them, but they're one that I like and that I use.
Yeah, and the whole benefit of robo advisors is that because they're automating your savings and you don't need a bunch of money managers sitting around a mahogany table, is that they just cost less over time. They do cost a little bit more than just, you know, going to Vanguard and getting your, you know, basic target date fund.
For sure.
But at the same time, they do, you know, have a more hand-holding kind of approach to getting
concierge
started.
Yes, more concierge approach. Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what the last listener, Ashley, might be missing from Fidelity is all they have is the portfolio tool kind of thing. Elevest, yep. Betterment, Wealthfront, they do help you get started, and they have the funds that they put you in, the portfolios they give you are diversified for you. Exactly. So you don't have to do all the thinking.
And if you're really interested, so I actually, what's this last year? Because they approached me last year and I was like, oh, they're like, we'd love for you to share LFS. I was like, I'd love for you to educate people. So what I did was I was like, if you want me to share it, one, I have to use it because, you know, I don't like to, because like, what if it sucks? And then I shared it with people. And then two, I made them, it wasn't really like a heavy twist because they were open to it, which I liked that I asked if they would do a free class to step-by-step show you how to begin investing on your own in this way. And so they said yes. And so I actually sat down with the CEO, Sally Krawcheck. She was really awesome. And we did a 5-day course. It's totally free, but it walks you through the very beginning stages of investing and uses LFS as a tool. And so if you're interested in that free class, it is Invest Like Women. Let me make sure. It's been a while since I've said if you've ever done any of my literature challenges, it's very similar. Invest like I just want to make sure, women.com. And so that way if you're interested, you could take the class. It's totally free. And Invest Like Women.com, like women, not women. MEN. And you could take the class. It's like, I think, like I said, it's like 5 or 6 days, but it'll really go into depth about like, oh, that's how the tool works. This is how, just in general, when you're starting to invest, why you need to, what does diversification look like? It, like, I really made them like go deep, definitions, homework. Like I went through it. So you'll see me, like, it's not just like, oh, it's just some rando class. No, I went to LVS. We taped it. I asked a ton of questions because I don't consider myself some savvy investor, quite honestly. And so I made sure that I was you in the situation. Like, well, what does that mean? Why should we do that? And so all of that is included. And so, yeah, it's something that I'm proud of. And it's completely free because y'all know I like to do stuff for free as much as I can.
Cool. I'm going to share that link in the show notes so you guys can check it out.
Yes. Great question.
I feel like we should do another investing episode.
We should. I think so. Ooh. I think we should do, I feel like investing, but maybe like in a different way. I'm trying to think of like what, like, you know, versus retirement, maybe we do real estate investing. You know, let's ask BA listeners, what kind of investing are you super interested in learning more about? We can find an expert to come and chat with y'all.
Do we care about what they want, though? Let's be real. Just kidding. Please tell us. Tell us what you want. We can actually request your ideal show. Like, what would you love to hear us do? We're friends now. We've been doing this for 4 years. You can be honest with us, whether it's investing or whatnot. That would be super helpful. Hit us up at brandambitionpodcast@gmail.com. Or go to brandambitionpodcast.com and hit ask us anything. You can also, of course, DM me on the gram. We're at brandambitionpodcast on Instagram because that's where every one of their mama is at now. And that's fine. Totally fine. For the old school folks, we're also on Twitter and Facebook. You can find us. Ooh, we are just like overexposed. That's what we are.
No, that's good. And now it's time for Booster Break for all the family. Will you boost? Will you break? What will you do, Mandy? Ah, that was so good! I'm sure I said that before, but I'm like, for some reason, and I don't like to break it, like, because in the middle, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's going really good. Don't mess it up, Tiffany. Complete the rhyme. So I feel really good about myself.
Oof. I mean, that was like some epic Brand Ambition freestyling. I'm really proud of you.
Are you going to boost or are you going to break?
I'm going to boost today. I got to be Sporty Spice today. And I have to boost, first of all, women's U.S. soccer team for winning the freaking second World Cup in a row. Yes, it was the only soccer game I have watched in total in like ever in my life. However, I support them and it was amazing. So go U.S. soccer. And then also, did you watch Wimbledon, that 15-year-old star Coco Gauff?
Yes.
She was like amazing. She beat Venus Williams. She made it to like almost to the fourth round of Wimbledon or something like that. She got knocked out, but she was on CBS this morning talking to my girl Gail, and it was such a cute interview. And she is so, I can never believe when like teenagers are so poised and eloquent and talented, because I was not any of those things when I was 15. And it was just, I don't know, just beautiful brown girl magic all over the place. And it's nice to know that once Serena and Venus retire, you know, to be billionaire icons, then we'll have the next generation coming up right behind them.
No, that is excellence. Well, you know what we should do? A pass the boost, pass the break. Like, if you guys have a booster break, this is just, it just kind of hit me. Like, if you guys have like a really dope booster break, send us a message on IG or an email, because I would love to like be like, you know what? I'm actually going to, like, one of my favorite podcasts, they do, like, pass the read. And I'm like, you know what? We can pass the boost, pass the break. Because I'd love to see what you guys are boosting and breaking. That was just a little aside. Well, I'm actually going to, you know what? I think I'm going to boost. And I'm going to boost Essence Fest. I had something else. I was going to do a sport one, like a Serena one. Well, not Wimbledon, but like, you know, her match. But since we already did sports, I want to boost Essence Fest, because this is my fourth year. And I have to say, it was so great to see so many, like I said, for the first time, I was actually able to get on the front end of it. And it was so great to see how many entrepreneurs, well, one that I knew, which was awesome, but it's just such a great showcase for like young or new or even established entrepreneurs to kind of show their wares, which is dope. You know, the city gets like hundreds of millions of dollars flooded into it. And I was thinking to myself, if it wasn't for not just Essence Fest, but like, you know, all of these great festivals that come to New Orleans, I wonder where it would be now, you know, post hurricane. I don't know. Essence is just like a family reunion. You get to see like every shape and size of an age of woman. And everyone is just like, I don't know. It was just such a, you walk into a place and you just feel at home. And it was just like such great energy. And so just a boost, because I can't imagine what it takes to put it on. One of Drina, my publicist and my bestie, her client, her name is Gina. And Gina is one of the executive producers of Essence Fest. And the insane amount of work that she has to do. So there's just so much work that goes into it. And, you know, I don't take that for granted. And it just runs, although on the outside, it looks like it runs so smoothly, behind the scenes, everyone's like, ah, you know. And so that, to go behind the scenes and kind of see all that it takes, I just want to commend everyone that does it. And just every year, because this year was it the 25th anniversary, I believe? And so, yeah, just more to come. You know, they're just, Essence is killing it. And now Essence is fully Black owned, which is nice. So yeah, that's my boost. Essence Fest.
Beautiful. I got to get to New Orleans, maybe in the winter though.
Yes.
Yikes. Yes. I know. All right, guys. Well, that's the show. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, hit up Twitter this evening on Wednesday evening after the show airs, and please retweet me. Let's see if I can get my $900 back.
Oh, okay? We doing it. Watch. Because, you know, I'm gonna be hungry.
Without a dishwasher, my marriage may not survive. I'm just going to be honest.
Right, who's doing these damn dishes?
It's not a happy household. I cannot. All right. Until next week.
Bye, y'all.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.